All right, you sexy bastards, this is Tom Torero, podcast 27. Get in there. Now, you might be listening on YouTube, or because of the wonders of technology, you might be downloading this stuff from iTunes. Finally, all the podcasts are on iTunes. I'm keeping up with the kids. I've got my Instagram going. I've got my Twitter going. Look at me, I'm getting on the social media horse, or you could say the donkey. I'm learning to ride the donkey, first of all. All the links are below on each of my YouTube videos now, so you can keep tabs with me. I won't be doing podcasts for the next 30 days, so there's a bit of a summer break. You can catch up on the old ones. But I will be putting out some vlogs, not daily vlogs, but consistent vlogs from my travels, certainly one in each city, so you can see some global street hustle, global flow mad tomfoolery stuff. You can meet some fellow street hustlers. It's going to be good. If you want to come to the free talks, like I said last time, just go over to tomtorero.com and all the dates and the places are there, and it lets you know how to reserve a seat. First one's this Saturday, Saturday the 11th of July in central London. All right, without further ado, let's dive in to today's podcast, which is another Skype interview. Forgive two in a row, but I couldn't resist when I got the opportunity to interview the one, the only famous Red Pill blogger and author, Rollo Tomassi. And we have a good old natter about the evolutionary biology underpinning game. All right, on the line from California Dreaming, West Coast America, it's Rollo Tomassi. All right, Rollo.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. It's morning for you, Saturday morning.
Yes.
On the 4th of July.
4th of July, yes.
Yeehaw.
I seem to do all of my my interviews on either my birthday or holidays.
That's very patriotic of you. I hope you've got a flag and some paraphernalia.
Yeah.
It's a big holiday, isn't it, even on the West Coast?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Hell, yeah.
We'll have some fireworks and some brew later on.
Good, mate. Well, God bless the US of A for all our American brothers listening. It's very kind of you, Rollo, to be on the show, to be on the podcast. For guys that don't know who Rollo Tomassi is, perhaps you're more of a gamer than being online or reading theory. Rollo Tomassi is pinnacle, is central in what people call the manosphere. He has his online blog called The Rational Male. He's the author of two books, Rational Male and Rational Male Preventative Medicine. You could say I'm talking about you in third person. This is funny.
That's all right.
It's like it's like on Saturday Night Live or something. But people would refer to you as a red pill writer, yeah?
I would say so, yes.
So for guys who follow me but they don't follow red pill stuff, red pill is just taken from, obviously, the movie The Matrix, red pill versus blue pill. It's an awakening. It's an awareness of truth, studying what people really do as opposed to what they say they do in terms of mating and dating. So this is why I love Rollo, because as a man after my own heart who follows evolutionary biology, behaviorism, psychology, the underlying forces behind game, and taking game to a much wider level, which is what we're going to talk about. You might, if you follow my stuff, you might have heard me talk about sexual economics, sexual marketplace, sexual market value. I've talked about this with Nick Krauser. I'm sure, Rollo, you're aware of David Buss, The Evolution of Desire.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I love the podcast. He's got a great podcast.
Has he?
Yes.
I don't follow him. I'd like to meet him. Yeah. He's down in Texas, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. I'd love to meet him because when I saw him giving a talk, he looked a bit square. He looked a bit professor-like.
Yeah.
But if you read his stuff, it's shockingly sexual and truthful, you know?
Another favorite of mine is Marty Hasselton. She's a professor out of UCLA.
Yeah, speaking the truth. I'll link these below. You've got Richard Dawkins, obviously, The Selfish Gene.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Ridley. A lot of guys might have read Sperm Wars by Robin Baker, but that's why I wanted to talk to Rollo today. So cheers for coming on, man.
Sure.
And can you give a quick overview for the guys that don't follow the manosphere or rational male, who you are and what you do?
Well, I have a behavioral psychology background mainly. And right around, gosh, I would say about year 2000, I was in at university and I was just getting into male and female interchanges. I had also a specialization in personality studies as well.
Yeah.
But I was following behaviorism mostly. And it was just kind of shocking to me that we would have such a hard, concrete science as behaviorism and not, apply that to intergender dynamics. So that's when I started getting into it. I started to just explore a little bit more. I started listening to Tom Likas a little bit, and I was, he has a rough delivery, and he's a pretty, showy guy as far as the talk show was concerned. He had a terrestrial radio show back then, and started listening to his stuff, and then I started just sort of connecting the dots and seeing, is this related? Is this behaviorism related to intergender dynamics? Because a lot of what I was studying at that time was, operative conditioning.
Yep.
And I sort of made the connection between how women would operantly condition men to, meet their own needs or to affect their own sex. Back then I didn't know what it was called, but to affect their own sexual strategies.
Yeah.
And I started connecting those dots, and I thought it was really funny. So I started bringing it up with colleagues and other students, as well as, my teachers at the time, and they were just adamantly against it. It was very much touchy-feely stuff. And even the guys who were like the real hardcore evolutionary psychologists were still, really hesitant to make those connections and to really, explore that. So that's what started me. And so I started getting into what would become the Manosphere by getting on a moderator for the SoSuave forums. And I got into it with these guys, and, we sort of hashed things out. It was a real debating forum for these ideas, and from those ideas then I launched a blog back in 2011, and I've been writing really for the last 10-12 years. But nothing formally until I started The Rational Male. And once I started doing the blog, then I had people saying, you really need to put this into a book so that it's more accessible. It's one thing to have a blog and have people take you seriously because you have a blog, but it's another thing to have, printed material in their hands and know that, the people who wouldn't take the internet seriously take a book seriously. Yeah. So I pretty much just codified all that into one book. And quite honestly, I thought that would be the only book I'd ever write.
Yeah.
So I tried to, put as much material as I had for, at that time, probably about 10 years. And then I decided that, I was coming up with some other ideas at the time. I was, I just published. I was just learning how to do self-publishing.
Yep.
And while I was doing that, of course, I'm still blogging. I'm still coming, just sort of exploring ideas over and over again. And I came up with another series on the blog called Preventive Medicine. And that sort of morphed into the second book because I always had I always had people hit me up and say, man, I wish I would have had this material when I was, 20. Where were you when I was 20 and didn't know anything?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, well, fine. I'm going to write a book that's going to address those things, what you can expect from women throughout their various phases of maturity. And so that was really the intent for Preventive Medicine. I will probably end up doing a third book later on. I haven't decided what exactly that's going to end up being, but I've decided that The Rational Male will end up being a series of books, and I'm just to, sort of see where it goes from there. I don't really have any concrete plans just yet. I mean, the second book just came out in March, so I'm just going to let that sit. And the first book still is selling crazy good right now, and it's really getting out there into, the mainstream. So it's good to see that happen too. So, but that's what I've been doing. That's, mostly about me.
What surprises some men when they come across your stuff is that you're a married man, despite having you had your player years,
mm-hmm.
and you clearly understand these dynamics live. Was that when you were at uni?
No. Just to give you a little bit of, you can look this up on my blog, but just to give you a little bit of personal history, I grew up in Los Angeles. I went to community colleges in Los Angeles. I didn't go to a university until I got to Nevada. But during my formative years, I guess, you know, from the time I was about 19 until I was about 24, 25, I played in various semi-professional bands in Hollywood, in the Hollywood music scene at that time. Yeah. And we're talking about the late 80s into the early 90s. And, yeah, I had my player times. Most of the times, I won't really even call it a playing because I was just doing what I felt was natural. Yeah. You know, I knew I wanted to get laid. I certainly wasn't in the music business to get, you know, to make money at it because nobody was making money. Yeah. It was there to be showy and it was there to, you know, hook up with chicks and that's all I did. Yeah. And, so if I have a game, it was really sort of a natural default. I had a talent, I had a look, and after a while, I figured out how to parlay that into, you know, getting laid semi-regularly. Yeah. I've had a few girlfriends at the time that were, you know, semi-long-term, but yeah, I mean, I had my player years, and then, I got married when I was 28, so.
Well, this is great because it gives you a much broader view, you could say, than guys who are purely into it as pickup artists, guys, you know. Solely focused on just getting laid.
Right. Well, it's much more of a, I don't want to say it's a science, but it's much more of a schedule. There's much more of a, I don't want to say a scheme, but there's much more of a strategy to it now than there ever was, you know, when I was, you know, in my 20s.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's definitely a, I mean, that was really kind of what got me into behavioral psychology in the first place, figuring out, you know, why we do what we do, you know?
The irony for me coming across your stuff and David Buss or Robin Baker is that at university I studied biological sciences. Mm-hmm. I studied with Richard Dawkins as one of my tutors. Mm-hmm. I was a very introverted academic nerd. So at the time I remember thinking, you know, what use is this? It's very interesting theoretical genetics. When would this ever benefit me?
Right.
And then disregarding that, going into my much later player years, having my fun, and mm-hmm. then coming full circle to realizing that my outer behavior and the outer behavior that I was seeing with girls that I was trying to pick up was exactly, surprise, surprise, explained by the genetics that I had learned 10 years before at university. And mm-hmm. reading your blog was like, it is joining the dots. So mm-hmm. you're taking very theoretical science and applying it to very practical pickup, because I think, as Krause has said, pickup and pickup artists are gathering all this data and they don't really know how to explain it. Mm-hmm. So you need a man with feet in both camps. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I also, I think that, you know, being able to apply, I mean, was it Nick was saying something about that, you know, game, you know, enthusiasts, I guess, for lack of a better term, you know, people who are out there in the field have done more experimentation
yes.
than anybody can do. Any, you know, scientists, you know, for lack of a better term again, can do in a controlled experiment. So when yeah. you're out there, you're actually performing experiments and seeing what works and seeing what doesn't. And, you know, then coming back with that and saying, here's what worked for me. See if this works for you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what the Manosphere is. Manosphere is a collection of guys. It's guys getting together and saying, here's my experiences. Here's what I've seen will work. And here's how I got screwed. And here's how I got burned. And here's how I got, I was successful at it. And here's how, you know, maybe you can try it too. I mean, my experiences are going to be way different than somebody in India's, you know, and I have people from, you know, South Africa hit me up. I have people from India hit me up, from all over the world, and we're sharing experiences. So it's really one big, large, you know, testing bed for everything.
Because one of my issues with the Manosphere, mm-hmm. in that I haven't gone deep into it, is that if you read this knowledge and you have an overview, you have an understanding, but you don't take action or you don't have the opportunity to take action, mm-hmm. I think it can very quickly descend into negativity or bitterness, anger. Mm-hmm. Certainly when I read The Selfish Gene as a geeky nerd, I was very, very depressed by it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Discovering this knowledge without being able to do anything about it is like a prison.
Yeah, well, you already mentioned before, I have a post, and actually it's in the first book, The Bitter Taste of the Red Pill.
Yes.
And what that, you know, was intended to address was that you're going to experience that. You're going to, when you have that transition from going from an old way of thinking into a new way of thinking, when you become red pill aware,
yep.
you really get into, I mean, I have another post called the five or six stages really of unplugging. And, you know, they go through, you know, anger, frustration, yeah. Disbelief, you know, things like that. Basically the same five steps that you go through when you're accepting death. And in a sense, part of you is dying because yeah. that blue pill idealism, that blue pill hope, those blue pill goals, those things that you've always been taught, you know, by Disney movies. Yep. I just watched that Pixar movie with, what was it, Inside Out. It's depressing and it's funny at the same time because I'm seeing things that I know, you know, through my own yep. experience and through my own red pill lens. And, you know, people are laughing and everything, but I'm looking at this movie going, oh my God, you know, this is actually very depressing to me. Yep. And if you're a red pill aware guy and you're the only one in the audience that gets it, yeah, that can be a pretty lonely place, man.
Yeah.
That can be a pretty upsetting, frustrating place because all of these things that you thought were so real and so concrete and you thought that you were going to be able to, you know, live happily ever after, you have to change that. You have to change your ideas about what it is that you want for yourself. And the good news, of course, is that, you know, in a red pill awareness, you can do that. You can reestablish hope for yourself, but you do it from a place of truth and a place from reality.
I describe exactly that point as once you see the overview, mm-hmm. you are in what Tyler used to call, you're in the secret society in that you see the hacks, you see the loopholes.
Right.
Which I see as massively useful and inspiring. And if you are a single guy or even if you're married, you can use this knowledge mm-hmm. to play Vegas at their own game, if you like.
Right.
So I think it can be liberating if, would you agree that if you take this knowledge, but you apply it positively?
Oh yeah, of course. And and that's sort of the message in the second book as well. That's why I did that, is so that people, you know, men would have a better understanding of what to expect.
Yeah.
From the women that they are either, you know, out in the clubs gaming or they are married to, or yeah. they have, heck, even your sister, even your mother.
Yeah.
People, you know, women that you work with at, you know, in your workplace, things like that, you're better prepared for it. And you know what's coming next. So, you know, if you know that your boss, your female boss is on the rag this week, well, you can plan ahead for that, you
yeah.
know,
yeah.
And you understand, you have a better idea of what is going to come the week after that, because women are on a cycle. They're not just, I mean, that's one of the biggest lies of the blue pill, is that everybody is everybody. Everybody's just even. We're all equal. We're, you know, the only thing that's different is the plumbing. That's bullshit.
Yep.
And the sooner you grasp that, the better off you will be, that we are not all equal. We are not all, well, not all exactly the same. Okay. Yep. Men yep. and women are different. It's fundamentally different.
I've obviously read both books, but I have to say the second book I enjoyed more because, as you said, it's a book that I could hand to a guy as mm-hmm. a practical manual and say, look, this is a woman's span. This is what's going to happen in different phases of her life and why, without her often being aware of it. So you stress the kind of subconscious aspect of this, because I think a lot of guys get caught up in thinking that women are doing this on purpose as a kind of an evil plotted game. When as a mm-hmm. biologist, I see that if I don't blame women as a pickup artist, if I just use this knowledge, as like I said, to improve my action taking, mm-hmm. I think it's very easy to see this knowledge as women doing this on purpose. Do you know what I mean?
Right, right. It seems manipulative. And I think that's one of the bigger disconnects a lot of guys have, is they expect some personal responsibility from women, and you should. And there's nothing wrong with that. Yep. I mean, it's just because you're built a certain way, or, you know, you're prone to certain things because you are a man, because you're a woman, or just simply because, you know, you are who you are. But that's not excusing. I mean, the game red pill knowledge is not excusing behavior. It's not a license to, you know, commit crimes. It's not a license to, you know, to sin. It's not a license to go out and do all that stuff. It's just simply knowledge. When you're talking about hypergamy, you know, you have to understand that that's how women are built. That is their sexual strategy.
Yep.
Men are different. You know, our impetus is unlimited sexuality with unlimited, you know, agency, you know, unlimited access to unlimited sexuality. If we can get it, we'll get it. You know, we'll try to get it.
That's a good time. If you could explain to guys that aren't aware necessarily of this double strategy that women are playing, because I'm sure you know men know instinctively their own strategy, which is this kind of polygamous, fuck as many young hot girls as you can to spread your genes. Mm-hmm. But it might surprise guys who are new to all this knowledge. What are the two strategies that women are playing?
Well, the euphemism, of course, is alpha fucks and beta bucks. Okay, when you are looking at women's sexual strategy, it comes down to what's called a dualistic strategy. And yep. That means that they're looking for the best genetic deal that they can get and the best provisioning long-term security deal that they can get. And I go into this in the second book as well, yep. As I outline just the biological underpinnings of that. You have to understand that women's sexuality, women's fertility is cyclic. So, during parts of their menstrual cycle, they're more prone to the alpha fuck side of things when they are in an ovulatory, what's called ovulatory shift is what it is their behaviors will prompt them to seek out the alpha, seek out the better looking guy, the guy with the more masculine qualities who are not necessarily is the best, long-term choice for them.
Yep.
Then in their, in the luteal, that's called the proliferative phase. The second phase, of course, is after meneses, and that ends up becoming the luteal phase. I go into that in the book as well.
Yep.
And so those are the two prompts. In that luteal phase, women are looking for comfort. They're looking for rapport. They're looking for the nice guy to comfort them. They're looking for security, looking for parental investment cues from a guy, more feminine, more comforting, features, as opposed to in the proliferative phase where they're looking for the hot alpha guy. And that's when you go see girls on their girls' night out at the clubs, generally they're probably going to be in the proliferative phase.
Yeah.
Because they're working it out, maybe not consciously, but on a subconscious level, they're trying to make it as convenient as possible for them to be in a position where they would find the guy like that.
Yep.
Or as opposed to in their luteal phase, they're looking for a guy who is, like I said, more comforting, more husband material, I guess.
I love how people claim that women are a mystery, this eternal mystery. I think even Professor Stephen Hawking said he understands black holes, but he doesn't understand women.
Exactly.
Whereas to an evolutionary biologist, it's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And your scheme in the second book, I mean, it lays it out bare. It's not that complicated, is it?
No. What I was going to say, though, is that biological underpinning then extrapolates into an overall strategy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking for the guy. A lot of people want to say that ideally, if a woman could find
one guy,
a hot guy with the provisioning aspects and was the ideal of those two,
mm-hmm.
you would like to say, okay, well, that's the guy that she's going to sell for, that, he is alpha fucks and beta bucks. The problem that you're running into right now is that that's not necessarily true, and particularly now with women being able to have more freedom in the sexual marketplace.
Yep.
And their ability to optimize hyperbanding. They're not looking for alpha fucks and beta bucks in the same guy now. They're looking for in separate guys.
To guys that don't know what hypergamy is, can you just summarize that term?
Hypergamy is, like I said, just what I was just talking about just now, is really a dualistic nature of women. The dualistic nature of women is that they want the alpha fucks and the beta bucks.
But the hypergamy, would you say, is like the upgrade when you constantly got the eye on the next iPhone?
Right. The best that they can do is not enough. The better is what they need. They need better than their sexual market value. That's what hypergamy is. It's women's constant look for a better sexual market value than they themselves can actually merit.
Yep.
So when we're talking about the hot guy and she's in her proliferative phase, that guy, if he's two steps above her in the sexual marketplace, that's what she's looking for. That's optimizing hypergamy. It's a better than level deal.
Yeah.
Also, when it comes to provisioning, if she can find a guy who is, a millionaire, is going to be better, a better provider than somebody who's, a sandwich artist at Subway.
Yep.
So,
but once again, it's her strategy. It's often subconscious. This is
right.
Where guys misunderstand it as her plotting this, late at night.
Right.
Okay, there are women, there are bitchy women, just like there are dick men. But just like we do subconscious things like looking at boobs, looking at asses, thinking about cheating on our girlfriend.
Right.
They're subconsciously looking for, you know, the back.
It's like I said, shit testing ends up being really a fitness test for that particular, you know, whatever that aspect of hypergamy that that woman is looking at.
Precisely. Yeah.
So for them to shit test you is as subconscious to them as you staring at a girl's boobs.
Yep.
That's what you're looking for. You're looking for sexual strategy optimization.
Yeah. This is a point that I really wanted to talk about with you. In seeing game as much wider than what the pickup community or people who are fascinated by pickup artists, game, because people will say things like, well, I'm married, so I'm not in the game. I'm out of the game. I don't like playing games. Mm-hmm. Pickup is manipulative because it plays games. And that's just a complete misunderstanding of life on Earth, and survival and replication being the ultimate game, or business being a game, or marketing being a game. Can you explain why game is not just pickup?
Well, I would say that game has a lot more applications. The way I define game is, well, I separate it from red pill awareness, is that red pill is really, I want to say, the theory. Red pill is sort of awakening yourself to the truth of what's going on with you and women and the sexual marketplace. And that's not necessarily just the sexual marketplace, because, like I said, it can be you working with a female boss. And yep. You're never going to fuck a female boss, but you can still have a better work life because you know game, because you know red pill, or you're red pill aware. Same thing applies for a married man. Athel K has his Married Man Sex Life blog, which I think has really kind of gone a little bit purple pill in the last, few years. But, originally the intent was to apply red pill awareness to marriage, married men.
Yep.
And how they can get along better, or how they can have a better, sexual relationship with their wives. Mm-hmm. These are guys who are already locked into, a long-term commitment. So they're going to want to be able to use this knowledge and use these techniques to, I won't say game their wives, but to certainly have a better idea of what they can expect from their wives.
That's why I just find it so odd when people deny game, because if you're running a business, free market capitalism, or you're playing chess, or you're doing anything with strategy, which is what survival and replication is,
right?
You're in the game whether you like it or not. And I find it fascinating that there's this recent kind of nostalgia, sentimentalism. I've read on the Manosphere where guys are saying, women were so wonderful before, before all these recent sociological changes, when there's always been alpha males and beta males. There's always been upgrading. There's always been these sexual behavioral traits. Do you know what I mean? These are millions of years old.
Well, I have, I got a post, I think it was about two posts back, but it was actually from an older post where I was sort of exploring the idea that, we're in some era of, this total degeneracy, and that it's such a shame that women are like this now. Well, you know what? If you go back and you look at the records for illegitimate births during World War II, and you look at how women, would cozy up with, German soldiers during the war, or you look at the people, look at the, I have the stats on that post, but it's a illegitimacy, or birth illegitimacy, as well as abortion during that time, is really shocking, because we look at that generation as being very romanticized. We look at the World War II generation as the greatest generation, right? And they were just as susceptible to hypergamy and to sexual marketplace strategies as anybody else was. It's just that the time was different and the conditions were different. We didn't have as widespread of birth control. I mean, we had rubbers and stuff like that, but they did not have hormonal birth control back then.
Precisely. I love the phrase, a beautiful phrase, genetics loads the gun and environment pulls the trigger.
Right.
But the genetics of what makes pussies tingle has existed for millions of years.
Yes.
So I'm not particularly worried when guys send me emails like, oh no, man, Tinder's ruining day game. An alpha male is an alpha male. I mean, don't you worry about Tinder. But I agree. Environment has shifted. But
there'll be something else that replaces Tinder at some point.
Of course.
The fundamentals, the nuts and bolts of it are still the same.
And the game moves are still the same. The chess moves are still the same, of pre-selection and jealousy. And you know what I mean?
Right.
There's nothing new under the sun. Nothing new under the sun. You mentioned the word purple pill, which I've scribbled down as well. So guys from The Matrix will know of the red pill, manosphere, red pill awareness, and the blue pill, kind of beta stuff. But there's this recent trend, certainly, I've spotted, even in the pickup community, for purple pill blogging, purple pill vlogging. Can you explain what purple pill is?
I see purple pill as sort of a watering down of the red pill.
Yeah.
And what I see that is, and most of this comes from the life coaches sector of, if you want to call it the manosphere, I don't even really wouldn't even call it the manosphere, because most of that is just simple formulaic advice. Some of it has a little bit of red pill, truths to it, but it's sort of a marching back of the red pill in order to make it a little more palatable to guys who are still hung up on blue pill idealism. They want to still, like I said, when you get to a point of red pill awareness, it can be very depressing. Well, I think that there's a want to march it back a little bit. There's a want to say, well, it's really not as bad as all that. It's not as bad. It's just that they don't realize that they can create hope in another set of circumstances. And I see that that's what's coming up with a lot of life coach bloggers. And they generally are selling something. And not that, hold that against anybody, but if you look at the stats for most of these guys, they have a very high, instance of having, women participate on their blogs and their forums and things like that.
It's when you see pickup guys asking girls on the street for dating advice, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I see it as a marketing move, because I really think I know a lot of these, dating coaches, life coaches, and they are teaching what's always been taught. It's still a pickup boot camp, but it makes it, as you said, more digestible. Then you get more clicks if you say that it's about Tony Robbins-esque things. You know what I mean?
Well, it becomes more female friendly.
More female friendly. And interestingly, after that Julien Blanc RSD storm, many guys, I think, just became fearful of what they were doing and saying. It's like when Darwin said God is dead, and there was obviously that backlash. So guys, a lot of pickup companies overnight switched to saying, oh, we're not teaching pickup. We're teaching self-development.
Right. Self-improvement. And that's another, so there's nothing wrong with that. But the problem that I have is that they're not embracing, red pill truths in their totality.
Yep.
Like I said, it's a marching back. It's making the blue pill more palatable because they want, they want a broader readership, of course, but they want it to seem a little more optimistic, a little more, and there's nothing wrong with being optimistic about things, like I said, but it's just that when you go and you water things down and you sort of push people back towards that blue pill idealism, that's when you start running into real problems.
Exactly. It's when it becomes the creationism thing of education in schools. When I'm only bothered by it when a coach is teaching students, let's say, about natural game with elements that are quite clearly wrong in terms of how men and women interact, then that's the equivalent of creationism teaching, isn't it? I mean, that's...
Well, it's like when I was in the beginning of the interview here, I was letting you know about, my experience with behaviorism. I was talking to, professors who were, very academic, guys who were very nuts and bolts about... that's one of the reasons that behaviorism appealed to me, because it was nuts and bolts. It wasn't this, new age, touchy-feely, humanistic type stuff. It was like, here is how it works. The only proof of motivation for a behavior is behavior.
Precisely.
It's what it is. But yet here I am still telling these guys, hey, look, women are doing this behavior, or they're evoking, or they're doing behavior modification with men. And they're like, oh, no, that can't be, people are above that. We know better, therefore we can control that. And that just blew me away. I was like, how can you guys be so nuts and bolts and still be touchy-feely when it comes to stuff like this?
I think because you've got that layer that it's such a dangerous hush-hush topic in terms of being politically correct. And that's why I remember when Sperm Wars came out, and that was a very controversial book. Selfish Gene still is, and God knows how much hate mail David Buss gets. But I admire him for just, as you said, he said, this is not how we say we behave. This is what we actually do.
Yeah.
And people find that very alarming, men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Because it hits a raw nerve. You know, this is how women are behaving. This is what men really want.
Right. And I think that, I mean, just to move things along here, I think that men are becoming more and more aware of that. And they're if they're not becoming accepting of it, they're becoming more aware of it. I go into the book in the second book about open hypergamy and how it's being, you know, proudly being flaunted, to men right now in commercials, in like the movies I was just saying.
Yeah.
Openly. You watch the commercials at the Super Bowl and you will see at least 6 commercials that play on open hypergamy.
Yes.
And at some point, even the most blue pill guys is going to go, you know what? This is a raw deal.
Yeah.
This isn't working out for guys, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I meet men, or I get emails daily where just the light switch has gone on, you know? But that's good. As long as it leads to positive action and them getting a better outcome, that's fantastic.
Exactly. Again, that's half the reason I wrote Preventative Medicine.
Yeah.
To sort of, you know, push that along and say, hey, look, here's what's going on. And the next time you see this, you'll see it.
I was about to say, yeah, that's the book I'd give people as like a hands-on manual.
Mm-hmm.
Because it goes hand in hand with what I'm teaching. What have I scribbled down here? Yes. Another controversial topic, or something misunderstood, because when pickup guys think of a relationship or they think of marriage, they're painted as very binary things. You know, like pickup artist, alpha, marriage, loser, beta.
Mm-hmm.
And now people are almost shamed in having relationships and being married. Can you talk about, obviously, marriage from a place of strength versus a chody kind of desperation marriage?
Well, I learned a long time ago that if I didn't man up, I was going to end up being divorced. If I didn't, man up is such an over abused term right now. But what I mean is by that is if I didn't accept the red pill, if I didn't accept things the way they are, just for the sake of not only just my marriage and my relationship with my wife, but also for my family, also for my daughter, also for my living arrangements. I mean, you think about the things that are contingent on being married and having a good, you know, if that's the direction you want to go, if that's the lifestyle you choose, because I look at marriage as a lifestyle choice.
Yep.
Okay. If you want to be single, you know, into your 80s, fine, go at it. I've said this before, as if I were to find myself single tomorrow, I would never get married in this state right now.
Yeah.
Because I know too much.
Yes.
So I have a very good marriage. I've been married, well, I will have been for 19 years on the 20th of this month.
Congratulations.
Thanks. And I don't necessarily see being a, you know, a married man as being a bad thing, or being, you know, you're automatically a pussy if you get married.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand the dangers. I understand that tomorrow everything could change. Mm-hmm. I understand that the risks that are inherent to a guy when you are, you know, a married guy, you take on a lot of that, and you need to understand that. In fact, if there's any reason for like preventive medicine, it's so that you know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
I'm not against marriage. I'm against, I didn't see it come in marriage. I'm not against, you know, having kids. I'm not against being a father. I mean, I have a different experience than a lot of guys do. I have a kid. I have a 17-year-old daughter. I've been married for 19 years. I've also been a player in the, you know, Hollywood music scene back in the days.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of life experience. You know, forgive me for seeming, you know, for glossing myself or anything, but it's like I have a broad experience that I think most guys don't have.
Oh, this is good.
That's the position that I write from. So if I were to be just a player until I was, you know, 60 or something like that, that's going to be a different experience. And, you know, God bless, you know, the guys who do that.
Yeah.
But their experience is going to be different than my experience. And I think that you can apply red pill truths to marriage. I've done so. And I would credit my wife with actually expecting those things from me, expecting that kind of, you know, that sort of positive masculinity that I've come into in a state of marriage.
No, I love it. I think of even the, you know, the Chris Rocks or the Patrice O'Neills.
Right.
And these guys aren't bachelors, or these guys are not single guys. These guys are coming into relationships just being men.
Right.
And as you said, loving the fact that if you date or marry a feminine woman, she is bringing out the man. She wants the man.
Right.
I only preach against marriage if it's A, the guy saying he wants to escape from the sexual marketplace, or B, he says, I want to find, you know, there's the one. There's the one in the universe.
Right.
And I met her when I was 17 at school.
Right.
So that's a misunderstanding.
Well, I approach marriage from a completely different perspective now than I would have when I was, you know, in my 20s. You know, I kept saying to my, I had just gotten out of a very, very bad relationship before I met my wife. I was with a borderline, you know, borderline personality disorder woman for a while. And it was a very psychologically abusing relationship, relationship. And so that's another another aspect of, you know, intergender relationships that I can address because I had that experience. It's horrible. And I would, you know, I would advise any guy in that situation just to simply get out. Don't try to make it better. Just get out and go. So I, you know, so I can address those things. And I think that having a woman that expects, you know, that positive masculinity is certainly another part of that experience.
Yeah.
There's not, you know, I didn't marry a unicorn. There are, you know, people who say, well, you know, you just got lucky, or you just got a great, you know, you just got into something that you didn't know what you were getting into. And I sure as hell didn't know what I was getting into. But I want guys to understand that, like, I think that most guys who get into a marriage go in with a weak frame, and that's the frame they keep throughout that marriage. And then because they're approaching it from a blue pill perspective, and they don't realize that right about the time that they're going to get married is right about the time that a woman needs to get married, or she needs her, you know, her sexual market value has declined to such a state that she needs to get that. She needs to have a plan B guy.
Yep.
And those guys end up being the guys who get fucked really bad in divorces later on. So, you know, I think that if marriage is a choice that you want to make, that's okay. But I think that you need to go in with your eyes wide open and understand that she needs you more than you need her at that particular point in her life.
Let's finish on a topic which I think is one of your favorites, is certainly my favorite, and it's misunderstood, and it links to exactly what you just said. That's frame control. Yeah.
Yes.
When I teach frame control, I usually get gasps from people in the audience. So I remember one guy came up to me after the seminar and said, you know, how does he strategize it? How is it? How can he make it secret? And it was as if he was going into a war, you know, as if it was confrontational. And it's very easy to see frame control like that, because when guys think of frame controls, they think of bitchy shit tests in a nightclub. Yeah. But when you're talking about frame control, and we're looking at it from a biological or a strategic point of view, frame control is everything, isn't it? It's exactly what you just said about roles in a marriage, going in with your eyes wide open, knowing who's holding the ball.
Well, I was telling in the last interview with Christian McQueen, I was telling him, you know, a lot of people say, well, you just have to game your wife all the time, and that's so much effort, and that's so much, you know, who has the time for that? How exhausting would that be? And I'm like, I don't game my wife. It's just who I am. It's just how I go about living my life and interacting with her. So because the frame is there, she expects me to be a positively masculine decision maker for our family, before, you know, as a husband, as a father, and as a man.
Yep.
You know, that's what she expects from me.
Yep.
And she doesn't want to be in control of the frame.
Yep.
There are a lot of people think, oh, well, they have wives that are like very overbearing, and they're, you know, they've allowed them to get into that situation because women feel, if they feel insecure about a guy, or if they feel like he's not going to step up to the plate, she's going to go and do it herself because she needs to. They don't enjoy it.
As Patrice O'Neill says, they don't want to win, they want a winner.
Yes.
And they'll resent you. It's a test. If they're taking the ball, they're waiting for you to take it back. I always think it's like a good teacher or a good parent. And you obviously know more about parenting than me, but from my teaching point of view, children push against your boundaries because they want you to lay down the boundary, and they love it.
Right.
So rather than seeing frame control as this horrible, gamey, manipulative thing, I celebrate it. As you said, the woman is giving you a chance, or is hoping that you will take back the frame.
And that goes against a lot of what we're taught in a blue pill context.
Of course, massive.
We're all equals. You need to support her. We need to be all on the same team, and we all need to, you know, express ourselves equally, and we all need to have and it's bullshit.
Yeah.
Because we are different. And once you start taking over that frame, and once you start taking control of that, you'll see how quickly that she, you know, she will either completely chomp the bit because she doesn't believe you, or she will acquiesce.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So not getting bitter, but getting real. And preventative medicine, for those listening, that's super clear on everything that me and Rollo have just discussed. Where can men find this fine book, Mr. Tomasi?
It's on Amazon. You can also come to my website, which is the, or my blog, which is the therationalmail.com.
Yeah.
And a lot of my stuff, I keep my books very affordable. The first book was only $9.99, and my, you know, I make a good living doing what I do for a living. So, yeah. I'm sure I make money off of it, but I only, price my stuff to, you know, to make them affordable and make it accessible, because I'm more interested in people getting their hands on this. And I'm actually more interested in guys getting the actual physical copies of the books.
Yeah.
Because it's good for them to have that.
Yeah. And if you're listening to this podcast on YouTube, then the links for everything we've talked about are below. If you're listening on iTunes, then just head over to my YouTube channel to find all these physical links to the authors and the scientists and the topics that we have talked about. Wow, that was a lot of stuff, Mr. Tomasi.
Yeah, crammed it into an hour.
Crammed it in under an hour on the 4th of July.
Nice.
Raising a glass to the USA and to everything you preach, teach, and write about. Thank you very much for coming on, man.
Good. Thank you. Thanks.
Cheers,
for having
me.